Time for a sofa upgrade? Introducing Anabe Sofas, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices. Every Anabe sofa is modular, allowing you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabe is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquid simply slide right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink and feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today. Sofas start at just $699 with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get early access to Black Friday now. The biggest sale of the year can save you up to 60% off, plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
And how's it going, everybody? This is Tyler Dunn sitting here with Bob McGinn for another Packers podcast. Take three, take four. Which one is this, Bob? I kind of lost track here.
Tyler Dunn, holy smokes. Let's discuss what happened this morning, okay? You be the lead dog on this one.
Well, we arrived here at McGinn headquarters to tape. Season wrap-up podcast here. We're going to get into more podcasts breaking down the offense, the defense, special teams, all that, future weeks. But we did our hour-long sit-down here, used a different program than before for reasons unknown, and just deleted inexplicably, and I couldn't get it back. So, Bob, you weren't too broken up about it, though, were you?
No, I thought it was a wonderful show, but we'll have to recreate. I know mistakes do happen, Tyler.
They do.
I thought I exercised good patience.
I lost contain.
It was horrible. So, not that I know anything about all these gizmos you're working on here, but I'm amazed we didn't lose it earlier.
That's true.
One of our previous installments.
In year three of this, you'd think we would have screwed up at some point, but yeah. Hey, okay.
Well, it's on you.
It's on me, and Hopefully if people are listening to this, I guess it worked, right?
Yeah. And we went down to some the Cheesecake Heaven.
We did.
And
great
you
spot.
Picked up the tab for the lunch.
Yes.
And
yes.
We're back again to take another attempt.
All right. Well, first of all, Wooly Bully, Bob.
Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs from 48 years ago.
Not bad.
The
not
Pharaohs. Pharaohs. I think it's not Pharaohs. I think Pharaohs.
Pharaohs? Are you sure about that?
With that extra A, I think you go with the long A there.
I don't know about that.
That's ancient Egyptian.
Okay, well.
You knew the song, too.
I did, yeah.
All right.
It's a stadium classic, right? They play that around.
Okay. It's good.
But we got to look back at this loss to the 49ers, Bob. We haven't really had a chance to sit down. And
well, we've talked about it this morning already, Tyler. Believe me, at length. Ad nauseum. What now?
Before Bob punches me here, we'll talk about that game, and we're going to wrap up this season, look back at Bob's column that ran this past weekend that elicited a little bit of a reaction from readers.
A tad.
Right. A smidge, if you will. So we'll put Bob on the spot, on the hot seat with that column. And like I said, we'll get into offense and individual grades, and you did all your individual grades after the season as well. We'll get into those specifics next week as far as that goes. But first things first, Bob. All right, so Green Bay, they lose by a play here, a play there, a Micah Hyde potential interception there, giving up those two third downs on the last drive. The offense failing to punch it in into the end zone. There are just so many different plays that you can look at with this game, and so many different plays that are going to haunt this team all offseason that they really could have taken advantage of in advance.
You're right. Should we go down to those last 6 minutes?
Yeah.
Let's get right down to it.
For the listeners, let's look at like those five or six specific plays that if they go the other way, maybe Green Bay wins this game. First one, what stands out to you?
All right, Vic Fangio, he blitzes off the slot. He hasn't blitzed the whole game. Aaron Rodgers, Starks blows it. Aaron Rodgers sees it. He eludes Parrish Cox. He throws the ball to Cobb. First down, great play. If the rookie Reed doesn't make that shoestring tackle, it's a touchdown. Ball's at the 9, first and goal, right? 6 minutes left. Green Bay calls timeout. All right, McCarthy inserts Randall Cobb. He puts him in. He's got an empty formation. He puts him in the left slot. He motions him into the backfield.
Yep. Let's talk about that decision first, Bob. The decision to use Randall Cobb in that role at that point of the game, that caught a lot of criticism from fans. But as we've talked about ourselves, neither one of us really have a problem with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is that element of surprise that McCarthy has always wanted with Randall Cobb against the 49ers. Didn't have that a couple years ago when he was mad at us reporters for writing about Cobb at training camp being used in different roles. He thought that we tipped off the 49ers there, that they were ready. Well, Randall Cobb is injured most of this season. They get him out there in a key situation, put him in that spot. They got the look that they wanted on that specific play. What happened?
So from the 9, I think I agree with you, Tyler. You're going to bang Lacy 3 times from the 9 or Starks. It's not going to work against that defense. It's not. So I think it's a hell of a play call, personally. And he motions Cobb. Again, he stuns that defense with motion. Green Bay doesn't do a lot of motioning. And he's going to pull Dietrich Smith around to the left. All right. They get the crack back by James Jones from that left outside. He cracks on the safety. Here comes Dietrich Smith. You got Bakhtiari and Sitton blocking down. Dietrich Smith's coming around the corner. And here comes 53. Now his vision is partially obscured by the stuff with Bakhtiari and whatever. But he has to pick up 53. That's the way the play is blocked. Instead, he goes tracking out to the out wide, and he blocks the cornerback. Meanwhile, 53 comes blown in with nobody laying a glove on him, and he tackles Cobb for 1 yard. The play is designed for Dietrich Smith to make the block. If he does what he's supposed to do, if he gets on the right track, as Bart Starr used to say. He used to say we weren't tracking properly today when the run game went for 38 or something.
How in the hell do you remember that?
Well, you never forget some of Bart's post-game comments, ever.
That's the 70s?
Ask Mark 80s? Daniels, the Green Bay radio station. He's been around longer
you
than
and Mark
I
Daniels. You guys are the elder yep. statesman here, yeah?
All right, so if Dietrich Smith does that block, then Cobb's going to go down there, and the cornerback will tackle him, the unblocked corner, which is, you know, you can't get them all. He's going to be on the 3. All right, so they blow the execution, right? And it's a gain of 1.
That's the look they wanted, the player they wanted with the ball in his hands at that point of the game. And for the criticism that McCarthy does get on that call, I think a good parallel here, a good comparison, is that Carolina-San Francisco game where the Panthers had the ball down there at the goal line 2 different occasions in the first half. And boy, Mike Shula, it just seemed like they were ramming the ball into a wall on 2 drives. No creativity, nothing different. You have Cam Newton at quarterback, one of a rare weapons at that position, and they just kind of kept ramming into a wall. So, I mean, these people that are saying, oh, just give it to Eddie Lacy when you get down there. It's not that simple. You're going against one of the best front sevens in all of football. It's just not going to work.
I don't
have a problem with the call, but, man, I mean, you want to talk about a player missing a block in a huge situation. You can't have that there because they settled for 3, and it really opened the door for San Francisco.
And final impressions of a player? They last a long time. And when Green Bay is evaluating Dietrich Smith, that's just the law of the jungle. They're not going to forget that block. It's going to go down with Bakhtiari's miss at the Cincinnati or on the 4th-and-1 in Bengal land that ruined that game. Those are the 2 missed blocks of the year.
So they do have 2 more plays.
Yes, they do.
Any missed opportunities there that you can recall and not getting the ball in the end zone?
He goes shotgun on the next one with an empty formation. Throws the ball away, and then he scrambles for 2. I mean, the Packers had trouble in the red zone, as we discussed previous today. they had problems in the red zone all year, Tyler, as you mentioned. And the red zone, it comes down to this is coaches. I mean, this is McCarthy, Clements, everyone on that staff drawing stuff up all for all these months, 4, 5, 6 months. Red zone's tight. It's tough. Green Bay did not get it done there, and they take a field goal to tie the game.
So why is that? I mean, all these weapons that they have on offense, maybe the game's best quarterback, maybe the game one of the game's best play callers, head coaches, yet there they are at the bottom of the league in the red zone. Now, obviously the field you have to work with, it's compressed. You're going against a good defense. They can take away a lot of what you want to do. One big reason has to be losing JerMichael Finley, 6'5". 250-pound freak of a tight end who's going to command double teams, who's going to draw all kinds of attention. Not having him on the field is one reason for these struggles, you would think. But are we missing something else? I mean, when you look back at the season?
It's beyond me how you design all these plays to beat certain coverages. I don't have any idea how you design offensive plays, anything like that. But this is the technical part of football that Green Bay has always been outstanding at. They got an offensive-minded head coach who's cutting edge on a lot of the things he does. I know, I think Edgar Bennett, isn't he in charge of the red zone?
Maybe Ben McAdoo.
Okay, yeah, all right. But these are all good coaches, and this is where, strength of coaching has to come in, and it just did not happen. It didn't happen a lot this year, so it's a 20-20 game instead of Green Bay leading 24-20.
The 49ers take over. They convert those third downs on the final drive. Let's start with the first one there.
Threw a shallow crosser to Crabtree for 11. Okay.
Well, actually, I apologize.
Oh.
Micah Hyde.
Yeah.
That missed opportunity first.
All right, so it's second and 10, and now the Hyde thing comes up.
Right.
And Hyde makes a good read. Kaepernick just doesn't expect it. And he throws in the left flat to Anquan Boldin.
So in many ways, that play is kind of a window into this defense this season with just the lack of playmakers, lack of turnovers, not having that one guy in that slot position who can take advantage of some things. I mean, Micah Hyde, he had a solid rookie season, as you wrote. I mean, great, solid tackler, probably be playing here for a while. No interceptions at a position that is occupied by Casey Hayward last year, Charles Woodson before that. And man, with the season on the line, you make that play, it's a totally different ballgame. And maybe the Packers are still playing right
That's true. You know, Micah, when I talked to him after the game, he was saying, after I posed the question, then he said, I catch that ball 100 out of 100. I disagree. I mean, that ball's high, it's cold. He hasn't caught a ball since warmups. I'll say 65 out of 100. How about you, Ty?
Yeah, probably 75, that
All
range.
Right. Okay.
I guess when I first watched it in real time, I thought that it should have been a pick six, just the way he kind of broke on it. But it was a little high. It wasn't an easy breadbasket kind of a catch.
No.
But, I mean, those are the plays that championship teams make.
They've got to be made.
You just have to make those. When you look back at when Green Bay won the Super Bowl, they made those plays time and time again down the stretch in the postseason with Tremont Williams at Philly ending the game there. The next round against Atlanta, Sam Shields in the NFC Championship game, the Super Bowl. I mean, you make those plays, and they couldn't do it for as well as the defense did under the circumstances of all the injuries and everything they were dealing with. Have to make that play.
They
had a couple more opportunities, which we'll talk about.
You know, you mentioned Super Bowl team, and for some reason my mind just went to the 96 Super Bowl team. I don't know. And that 96 team, I think at midseason, I think they were plus 19 giveaway takeaway. Do you believe that?
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. All right.
And yet we were also talking on the way to lunch on the 2005 Mike Sherman team. We were a negative.
They turned it over 45 times, took it away 21, minus 24 for Mike Swansaw.
Now he's
minus 24. That's good football.
All right.
Third and 10.
All right, and Dom Capers, he plays this one straight. He doesn't blitz, doesn't do anything too crazy. What happens?
It's really loud. I'm looking at my notes. I mean, that was the crowd was at fever pitch.
Let's give it up to the crew. We're pretty critical of the crowd here on the podcast before at Lambeau Field. I thought the atmosphere was really good.
Okay.
I thought it was loud. It was packed. It was freezing cold, but it was a really good atmosphere, especially at this point of the game. I totally agree with you.
My son went to the game, and he said it was also very loud, and the crowd was supportive. Yep. They're in a dime defense. Dom rushes four. And they hit Crabtree, makes a really good catch off a seven step. Kaepernick stepped up, and he's kind of in there by Jarrett Bush. You can't stop that. I mean, it's a zone. It's a cover two zone, and he completes it for 17. First down Niners, right?
Correct.
Okay. Had it been a Packer first down, we would have heard, and that's another Packers!
And Bob loves it when our buddy Bill Jarrett does that at the games, don't you?
I just can't believe you talk about amateurish, huh? In that beautiful stadium and you got that stuff going on, it's nonsense, Ty. It's really bad. Okay.
I'm telling you what, though, Bob. I mean, if the trade-off is taking that over the G-Force stuff, remember G-Force?
Now that was good
that
stuff.
Was bad. That was bad. That was cartoonish. That's like the new Chicago Cubs mascot.
And I don't think our friend Bill Jarts does that by himself. I think he's been told to do that.
He's like the best in the biz on TV here in Green
he's,
Bay.
He's a great man, too. And nobody does more for charity around this town. I mean, that's a great guy. And I don't think he does that of his own volition.
We should tell these guys every time that they say that at the stadium, I just look over to you in the press box and you're shaking your head. Just every time.
Like 10% of the time. Come on, Ty. I'm over it by now.
All right. You are.
So they run Gore for one. M.D. Jennings gets up and puts a lick on Gore. Second and nine. They match up Gore on a check down against Brad Jones, and that's an easy 11 yards. So the two-minute warning. Ball's at the Green Bay 40. They run Gore for two. Power off the right side. Dom's in the base. He's got nine men milling up at the line. He throws incomplete on a crossing pattern to Vernon Davis. Third and eight with 1:13 left. Clock stops on the incompletion. All right, now Dom. Dom has talked about this many times, you know, and he's done this a lot. When push comes to shove, he will not just sit there and take it and take another. Can I have another belt, please, or whatever?
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Yeah, right. Dom's not going to do that, and I agree with it all the way. He has not sent more than six all season long. He did it three times, and he didn't do it at all last year. So there's a stoppage of play, and Dom sends seven. He's trying to contain Kaepernick. That's his number one goal, right? And he's got good cornerbacks. That's his best position on defense, and he's going to live and die with those people in zero man coverage. It's a gutsy move, but it's a great call. Again, it's a terrific call. So,
in big picture, I mean, Dom Capers has talked about this as well. With all these young players and inexperience, he's been hesitant to put too much on their plate and to ask too much of them over the last month and a half of the season. And so with the game on the line, rolls the dice, gambles, and you have to think that he was thinking about that previous third down where he did play it straight,
yep.
And he just, guys sat there, you watched Colin Kaepernick complete a pass to Crabtree. I like the call, a lot like, you know, McCarthy maybe doing something a little different there at that point of the game. The other side, Capers does something a little different here.
I like them both. All right, so on that left outside, as the Niner offense is looking at it, you got Jarrett Bush, the most intense, prepared, conditioned athlete on that team, and I could think of no one who cares more about winning or losing in that locker room than Jarrett Bush.
Agreed.
The guy is, I mean, he bleeds it, and he doesn't just talk the talk. He acts it in every way, shape, and form. That's not to excuse what he did, but so he comes in, and he has outside contain. I mean, he really does. That's his gap, that far, I don't know what gap you'd call it, D gap or E gap, I don't know. And, all right, he sees Frank Gore. He can overpower Gore. He's probably a stronger guy. And he dips a little bit to Gore's right shoulder, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And Kaepernick, the instinctive, fantastic athlete that he is, makes him pay. Most quarterbacks cannot do this. They couldn't even think twice about gaining 8 yards on this play. But he makes him pay, and he's out like a light. And Malumba, playing on a bad knee, can't chase him down from the backside, and he's the only guy that can make the play. Nate Palmer's inactive. He would have maybe been a candidate to do it, perhaps. He's in street clothes, and he gets 11 yards. Now, there's been a tremendous amount of heat on Bush for this. He blew it. There's no question. It's a very minute mistake, but it is a mistake. And I know some of you listening on this have also been hard on Bush. And I just remind you how many times you've screwed up in your life, in your occupations. This is not easy stuff, and it was exploited by a fantastic stallion of an athlete. And when I think about Jared Bush's season, I'm going to think more about the two plays against Gonzalez than I'm going to think about this. Right. Tyler, your floor.
It's a great point. I mean, to me, when I watched that play, it's just kind of what the Green Bay Packers defense was at this point of the season, taking its last breath on the hospital bed. You got Andy Mulumba on a sprained knee. He didn't want to use it as an excuse in the locker room when we talked about it at first. Asked again, he kind of admitted that on a good knee, maybe it would have been a different story. He just didn't have it on that play. I mean, it's pretty evident for everybody that was watching the game. He could have taken a good angle on a healthy knee and maybe even gotten Kaepernick, but that's what this Packers season came to. I mean, you have an undrafted rookie from Eastern Michigan who came over to Canada from the Congo, picked up organized football at 17 years old, limping, trying to chase down maybe the greatest athlete at that position in today's game. And 23-20, the Packers defense, I don't think you can put this loss on them. This is just an unbelievable athlete that this team has not been able to figure out. And that play, that moment, things really got difficult for Green Bay.
But it's not over yet. Phil Dawson's only looking at a 45-yarder in wind and cold weather. It's not an easy kick. The Niners got to get closer. 107 left after Kaepernick stepped out of bounds. All right, so now Green Bay's got a 9-man front. And they got a 9-man front milling around that line for the next 4 plays. Tyler, you need to stop the running game, Frank Gore, with 9 in the box. It's just a given. Any defense worth its salt has to do this. It's what Green Bay could not do against that Bears at midseason. They couldn't do against the Eagles. Those are the most shameful, embarrassing moments of the whole year. All right, what does Frank Gore do? 5 yards off left tackle against that. Are you kidding? Timeout Green Bay. Gore for 2. A.J. Hawk makes the tackle. 3rd and 3. Timeout Green Bay again. Gore gets the first down off right guard for 3. 3 carries for 10. Clock's running 30 seconds. Gore gets 2 more. Timeout San Francisco. 3 seconds left. Now it's a 33-yarder instead of a 45. The run defense caved. It's as bad as Hyde, or it's as bad as Bush. Absolutely. And it's as bad as Dietrich Smith. You got 4 things going on that are the recipe for defeat. And Dawson, the free agent signing, is up there. This guy's done it for 14 years in Cleveland. It's duck soup. It's easy. David Akers, the guy Balky dumped in 2 days before he signed Dawson. What's he up there? He's a 50-50 shot to make that kick, but no, the Niners are not going to go in unprepared. They took care of that 10 months earlier with Balky's decision. He pays Dawson. He paid Mr. Dawson $2.35 for 1 year. It's a lot for a veteran guy. Yeah, you can say they can do it because Kaepernick doesn't have a big deal yet. I'm not a money man. The point's well taken, but Dawson drills that baby and it's over, huh?
And really, this is the part of the game, of that drive, that really hasn't gotten a lot of play in the aftermath of that loss for Green Bay. Because when you really think about 10 to 15 yards for a kicker in that cold, that frigid, icy cold, I mean, maybe that weather affects a kicker more than anybody else on the field. I mean, you're on the sideline, you're waiting. Yeah. I mean, you don't have the adrenaline pumping like everybody else. You're waiting, maybe you kick a few balls into the net. I mean, we saw these guys warming up. Crosby and Dawson, and you could tell that the weather was affecting both kickers. And I'm sitting there with Marty Hendricks, our coworker there. He writes for Packer Plus. He's been around for a while, and he just told me the story of the 2007 NFC Championship game, the last time it was that cold at Lambeau Field. And he went to the Giants locker room after that game to talk to Lawrence Tynes. And he said that Lawrence Tynes, when he took his boot off there, his whole foot was bruised.
Wow.
Black and blue, just all bruised up from the cold and kicking the ball.
Jeez.
I mean, I can't imagine what what Dawson's look like. I don't know. I didn't talk to him, but I mean, just that image and just what this weather can do to a kicker. I want to talk about the distance of the field goal. It's a little difference when you're kicking in the 30s to the 40s for him in that situation. And you just go to those three Frank Gore runs. I mean, it's, there's so many points on that drive and the previous drive. One play is different. Maybe the Packers are playing in the NFC Championship right now.
Green Bay's been in the 20s against the run 4 years in a row, Tyler. They were number one or number two in Capers' first year, 2009. It's a really a bad indictment.
All right.
Terrible against average per rush. It's bad football.
It is. It is. And so the offseason has arrived. And before we dive into the offseason, Bob, you wrote a column that got a little bit of a reaction, a tad.
Ty, before we get into that, let's discuss the offense in this game, all right?
Sure.
Let's discuss that a little bit,
all right,
okay?
All
right. And then we'll get to that stuff. All right, so in this game, Fangio played. He rushed with four because he can rush with four. He's got really good people. Alden Smith outplayed Bakhtiari. Brooks had, you know, Barkley had problems with Ahmad Brooks. And Justin Smith and Ray McDonald, you know, collapsed the pocket. They prevented Rodgers, other than a few times, from really running up. So that forces Rodgers with that two-deep shell to use the running game, to throw checkdowns, to be judicious with the ball. And he had an ordinary game. That's all you can say. I mean, these games are designed for dominant quarterbacks to be dominant, and we're going to be talking about this for his whole career. Rodgers is one great player, and he has to come through in these moments. I mean, that's just it. That's how you win games today. You have these quarterbacks making these great plays, and he was okay. He was involved with three of the four sacks, and he was okay. Kaepernick made his share of mistakes, but he didn't get it done other than a couple of two fantastic extended plays, and it was another defeat.
And boy, the criticism I've been getting in my email these past couple weeks, writing a column about Colin Kaepernick. There was a line where I wrote, Colin Kaepernick outplayed Aaron Rodgers. And people say, well, look, one quarterback has protection from his line, one doesn't. Look at the defenses. Look at this. Look at that. It's a playoff game. Quarterbacks rise to the occasion. Colin Kaepernick made the plays when he had to make them. Aaron Rodgers didn't. The touchdown to Vernon Davis in the fourth quarter, the plays on that final drive, you know, maybe Aaron Rodgers finds a way to hit a receiver there on third and goal from the nine. There are plays and moments you can look to where I kind of agree with you. I mean, in a playoff game, playoff moment, you need your quarterback to rise up. And we all know how reliant this team is on Aaron Rodgers. We saw him with him on the field and off the field for this game. Kaepernick did outplay Rodgers, and he's got 1,200 yards against these guys and three wins. They have to figure him out. He's just dominated the Packers.
I agree totally, completely.
Bob, let's get into your column now. And let's see. Well, I'm going to pull it up here online. It looks like you got 904 comments. Got a little bit of a reaction, let's say.
Yeah.
But basically, what was the point? You do this every year, wrapping up the season, looking back, trying to put things in perspective with where the team's at, looking back, looking ahead. As you said, as the column started, it's one thing to be confident. It's another to be smug. Just kind of let the reader into your thinking here a little bit.
Well, let me just, I'm going to just mention, I've heard from some people, the headline, the underline in our paper said, Green Bay getting left behind by NFL elite. And our bosses, Mike Davis, the sports editor, and his assistants, Bill Windler, Louisa Boardman, Jeff Myatt, they do a terrific job. Many times we're understaffed, and they run a fantastic department. Hats off to them. On the headline, you know, the story was really about the season. That's my assignment here, to kind of wrap up the season. And I don't want anybody to think this team can't have a big year next year, that they're being really left behind by anyone. Thompson and McCarthy, these are good football people. They've proved it over time. Everybody has a rough patch in their lives, and I suspect they'll be on the rebound, and they'll be bouncing back to put together good football. As for Rodgers, he's a brilliant quarterback. Capers is a top five or top 10 defensive coordinator. So, but it was about the season, you know, and I don't think those four guys, I think none of them would be real proud of the way it went. Can they win it all next year? Yeah, they can be 14-2 and win the 49th Super Bowl. They certainly can. This team has good talent, and they got good people. They got tremendous resources, unreal resources in Green Bay. They spend a lot of money. They have a lot of money to spend. They can basically do anything they want. A lot of teams can also have big seasons and win that Super Bowl. I mean, who can't? The Browns can't. Jacksonville can't. Oakland, Houston. Other than that, St. Louis could win it all next year. Who's to say they can't? They got a QB coming back. Who's to say Tampa Bay? This Glennon could really develop. Who's to say the Vikings couldn't if they get Bridgewater or Bortles or, and just all of a sudden their players come together? Who's to say the Lions, what Jim Caldwell could do with Stafford? Teams all over the league can do this. And I just, you know, I know Green Bay, McCarthy, and Rodgers have talked about this window being open for X amount of time. Fine, it still is open, but it's open for a lot of people. They are not, you just can't ordain them, anoint them as a team that's one of the top three Super Bowl contenders for next year. You just can't. I mean, they got weaknesses on defense, and they've had problems procuring good players on defense. Their special teams are very ordinary. The quarterback hasn't played great in the playoffs. McCarthy didn't have a good year, and we can cite a lot of examples for that. So that was basically the theme of the contract or the column. These seasons aren't eternity, you know. I mean, 8 weeks is equal to almost 20 years in another industry. This is such a fluid business, and you never know where these things. These games go down to the last play. You try to analyze this stuff. It's a very difficult job. It's a hard industry to get a handle on. Green Bay can have a big year, but they can continue on this path to a mediocrity, too, if they're not careful.
You know, my takeaway from reading it was Seattle and San Francisco have two athletic quarterbacks with great defenses, good supporting casts, and within Green Bay's own division, who's to say Minnesota, Detroit, and Chicago don't turn it around and challenge there as well. That if Green Bay doesn't do A, B, and C, if they aren't proactive this offseason, they don't address specific needs, that they could be left behind, right?
It's possible. You're darn right, it's possible. There's only so many picks, and they got a lot of holes. They have a lot of strengths, and they've overcome a lot of injuries. They didn't overcome them in November, and that's to McCarthy's discredit. But the other way to add players are through trades or through free agency. Just for example, Carolina. There's a lot of mistakes made in free agency. I mean, 80% of these players never plan out. That's why Ted Thompson, he has to trust himself. He looks at pro tape all year long. In addition to the college, he's constantly looking at pro guys. He's got Elliott Wolf. He's got Alonzo Highsmith, Tim Terry, anybody else in that building who look at pro tape. You got to rely, and this is where scouting comes in. Now, let's just look at Carolina. Charles Godfrey, one of their starting safeties. Godfrey suffers a season-ending injury earlier in the year, and their number three safety is Mike Mitchell. Now, Mike Mitchell was an Al Davis second-round pick, I believe, in maybe 09 or 010 out of Ohio University. People laughed at that pick. They laughed at that inside the Oakland business building itself because he was an Al guy. He ran 4-4-4, something like that, physical specimen, didn't really play the game, showed no ball instincts, and he didn't do it in Oakland. He started 9 games or something in 4 years. Shortly before free agency, his agent sent me an email. And he said, you know, Bobby says, I have an idea. Green Bay is going to be interested in Mitchell, blah, blah, blah. I said, you know, thanks. So what happened? Mitchell eventually signed with Carolina. He signed 1 year, $1.0. He got $250 signing bonus, just a little bit above minimum wage. So what happens? Godfrey goes down. They plug in Mitchell, and Mitchell starts, and he's playing. And I watched this guy in this divisional game the other day. He was able to pressure the quarterback. He delivered some hard hits. I liked the way he tackled. He's got range based off the speed. He was chippy. He was in people's face. He wasn't backing down. It was an impressive signing, Tyler. All you got to do is watch just one game. Now, I don't know about his mental capabilities on running the defense for Rivera. I don't know anything about that. But the guy, from a physical standpoint, man, he would have helped Green Bay. 1 year, 1.0, 250 to sign. This is the kind of player Ted Thompson never signs, and it's the kind of player Green Bay must examine and get after.
Totally agree. I mean, if you look at these last four teams remaining, I mean, there's a lot of these kind of unlikely the veterans, unlikely pickups that are playing huge roles for their teams. LeGarrette Blount. I mean, wow. Tampa Bay just didn't want the guy. I mean, they had Doug Martin. They trade Blount for a seventh-round pick?
I think so.
And now he's scoring four touchdowns, rushing for 150 yards or whatever he had. He was New England's offense. So we're not sitting here saying that the Packers should go out there in free agency and sign Jarris Byrd, sign some top-five player at his position for an overpaid contract, something that could backfire in a big way. Because if, I remember doing the story last offseason, just kind of examining the previous free agency, and man, I mean, the success rate is not high at all. I mean, you can see why Ted Thompson doesn't take those chances on players on other teams, but you should keep all options open. And sometimes veterans, sometimes experience, low-cost experience helps. I mean, Tremont Williams said himself that, hey, sometimes older guys can help you out. So, I mean, draft and develop is a big reason Green Bay has remained a winner and been in the playoffs year in and year out. But I agree with you. I mean, some veterans wouldn't hurt, and this team has a lot of holes. They have to examine free agency and that option in building the team. Like you said, they have a lot of great minds in their personnel department that look at every game, every play, examine all of these players. Dewan Harris, a couple years ago, I mean, they get this guy off the street. He was selling cars. He was with a couple teams before that. Ends up being their starting running back. You never know when you might find that player. And maybe they did kind of stick with a few of these young guys a little too long this year.
Hey, they did well in street stuff last year with Matthew Mulligan. Matthew Mulligan should have been on this team. I don't care what they say. You saw him blocking in the New England game in their jumbo sets. He played, I don't know, 15 snaps every time. Hands inside against those outside backers or blocking down on DEs. He controls the guy. He controls him every time. Now, what did the Packers live with? Finley, then Corliss, and Taylor, and Bostic repeatedly being beaten inside on short yardage, missing wham blocks, not doing that great on leads. Corliss' blocking was a horrible disappointment. Matthew Mulligan, okay, he's not a great athlete on special teams, and he may not be a great catcher. You put him in there, and you get toughness on your football team, and you get a run game. Lacy's average would have been better, and they would have been better on third and fourth and one. They had a guy. Their personnel department came up with it. Maybe the best blocking tight end in the business, and they cut him. I don't get that call at all.
It's interesting. I mean, didn't get to really watch him that closely this year, but he's found a home there and has been playing pretty well.
Yeah, and all August it was the same, right, Tyler?
Right.
You saw that guy lock up people in the one-on-one drills. Every August morning he was out there. This guy came as advertised, exactly. He played the way he was.
So, I mean, I think one, to play devil's advocate when you read this story, injuries, Bob. I mean, this team had a historic amount of injuries, starting with the two guys that they gave historic contracts to, and Aaron Rodgers and Clay Matthews. Not having both of those players for prolonged periods of time. It wasn't just them. Nick Perry breaks his foot. He's playing on that thing. JerMichael Finley's out. Randall Cobb's out. Brian Bulaga's out. You can go right down the line. They were missing some key players this season. How much of an excuse should that be for this team finishing 8-1?
They had 11 starters miss 58 games counting playoffs. The year before, they had 13 starters miss 93. When they won it all, they had 12 starters miss 112 minus, and for minus 112. Now, they never lost their quarterback, obviously. So, Rodgers, 7 games, you could multiply that by about 10 if you want to get an equivalent factor. Hey, you lose Rodgers, Matthews. It's a tremendous burden. Is some of this injury stuff their own fault? Boy, that's a hard one to say. I mean, I don't want to go back to it, but I wrote that thing on August 28th, what other teams are doing around the league about the hitting early in camp. Let's not revisit that. But There's a lot of different theories, and Green Bay does not have a handle on it. This is 4 years in a row, basically, in which they've been devastated. It's absurd. It's a big factor in why the season went 8-8-1, mm-hmm. obviously, Tyler, right?
Right. You know, I just keep going back to a conversation with Devon House when a lot after Jermichael Finley went down, and he said, look, as long as, kind of pointed over to Aaron Rodgers, as long as he's healthy, we're okay, basically. Yeah. So they felt they could withstand a lot of these injuries, and they have in years past, as long as the quarterback is healthy. I mean, this is a team, for better or worse, that is ultra-reliant on Aaron Rodgers. When he went down, they just didn't have a backup plan. I mean, they had all this faith in Graham Harrell and B.J. Coleman. They bring in Vince Young at the 11th hour. A little blind optimism there with those two young quarterbacks. Backfired in a big way. I mean, who knows? Maybe Seneca Wallace would have ended up helping keep this ship afloat if he doesn't hurt his groin. But they signed Matt Flynn about a week too late. Scott Tolzien does some good things, but he's a young quarterback. It was just all-out scramble mode at number two quarterback when it didn't have to be. I mean, you had to pay up for those veterans in the offseason. I mean, Matt Hasselbeck and some of these guys, they got pretty good contracts, which maybe they couldn't have fit in. But I remember Matt Hasselbeck telling me he would have been interested in signing with Green Bay.
Wow.
He would have. But it happened really fast. Indianapolis made a really good offer, and he was gone. But they really should have handled number two quarterback a lot better than they did. And maybe it's a different situation here with Rodgers going down.
I mean, will we ever hear from Harrell, Coleman, and Young again in the NFL? They might never be signed again.
Probably not.
All right. McCarthy, it's a blot on his record what happened after Rodgers went down. I mean, you lose a quarterback first time in 21 years, and you can't win. You say what you want about Seneca Wallace. This guy has got a pretty good track record and a pretty good resume. You know, those were all scout teams reps he had before he started playing here. I would like to have seen what he could have done. McCarthy, really, I mean, he did not inspire that team to carry their performance level beyond the norm. Didn't happen. That's what you have to do. This is what great coaches have done for many, many years around the league. It didn't happen. It's a disappointing blot on his record.
Well, here's a guy who's kind of a renowned quarterback coach, a quarterback guru. I mean, he's been around some of the best at the position. And for to stick with those young backup quarterbacks as long as they did, didn't work out. Didn't work out. I'd be surprised if we saw Harrell and Coleman again. And, I mean, you got to love B.J. Coleman talking to him. I mean, there isn't a more confident guy in the room. When the Packers drafted him, told Mike McCarthy this was going to be the best draft pick he ever made, right?
Yeah.
So, but he just didn't have it. Just didn't have it. And it'll be interesting to see what they do at backup quarterback this offseason. I mean, they could, I guess, stick with Flynn. They like Scott Tolzien. Maybe they try to develop him. You have to think that they would draft somebody, something they probably should have done last year or higher than the seventh round before that. We'll see.
It wasn't just McCarthy. When I wrote that column on November 2, I mean, I didn't quite expect the defense after how well it had played through seven games. I didn't expect them to cave in and just become a marshmallow against the run, like a bunch of 11 mannequins out there waving all these running backs going by. No, I didn't expect that.
So what happened?
I thought they'd get more out of the special teams too, Tyler.
Right.
At this point, that they would rally to the cause, to the backup quarterbacks. Didn't expect any of that. I mean, and they had a soft schedule. I mean, I didn't think they'd win them all, but I certainly expected a lot more than that, and there should have been a lot more production during that month when they couldn't win a game.
We're going to get into defense and players specifically down the road here, but with that run defense, what happened? I mean, they were shutting guys down. They were shutting down Reggie Bush, Frank Gore, Ray Rice, LeBron. I mean, that first part of the season, they were a top five run defense, and then the back half of the season, they were one of the worst.
Well, let's just cite a few things. I'll cite two, and you cite two. All right, M.D. Jennings, no physical presence. Morgan Burnett missed so many tackles the second half of the season. You go for two.
I think Clay Matthews, obviously everybody sees him sacking the quarterback and flexing his muscles, but he's probably the team's best run defender. Not having him out there during that stretch, that had to hurt. And Nick Perry, whether he was playing banged up out there on the foot or not effective in year two. Big, strong guy you expect to be a good run defender. Either he was out or wasn't what they want there at that position. Defensive line, it's always hard for us to really tell who's at fault sometimes, stopping the run. But B.J. Raji, did he really take a step this year? 17 tackles, not really any impact plays. That's a whole other story.
Step in the wrong direction.
So there's a lot of different ways to look at this. But back to your original point, I mean, Rodgers goes down. You expect others to rise up and step up. You got the defensive depth chart right in front of you. We're staring at it. Tremont Williams is the name that stands out. Maybe Sam Shields. That's a position of strength. But the players around the quarterback didn't rally during the month of November. They eventually were able to salvage the season, to win the division, to get into the playoffs, all of that, and give Matt Flynn credit. I mean, here's a guy who led one of the best comebacks in team history at Dallas, but that lost month of November really hurt this team.
Inside linebacker play, we better touch on that. A.J. Hawk played pretty well. I thought he played beyond his means the first six, seven games. Again, he was part of that strong defense. And then there was just, he ended up allowing 3.5, being responsible for 3.5 of their 18 runs for 20 yards or more. That was a team high. He went back to his pedestrian type of play that marked his career. Brad Jones played hurt, had to play hurt, but even before he got hurt, he really wasn't doing all that. Very little speed at inside backer. I mean, you compare this with what Carolina and San Francisco,
right.
Even a guy like DeAndre Levy for Detroit. There's no sideline presence really from those inside backers. They hurt him in coverage. It's not a good position right now. Sam Barrington would be the hope for next year.
It's interesting. You mentioned him in your story. We'll see.
Yep.
Well, we don't have a lot of time here left, so we're going to get to a few questions again. I know you want to answer these again after you just did it a few hours ago, so let's go right back to Nick, our buddy down there in Milwaukee. Yes, and you just touched on this. Middle linebacker and safety are as important as shortstop and center fielder in baseball, right? Is there an NFL team worse at those four spots right now than Green Bay?
Well, I don't think they are as important. You know, so much of this game is shortstop is the – and center field are the key defensive players, but in football, just because you're in the middle, it's harder to play cornerback than safety. It's harder to be an outside backer than a middle backer. You get more money, so I don't think it really applies. All right, Jeff. Jeff Nelson, our bud. Will the Packers go all out to sign Sam Shields, or will they let him walk because they don't want to spend the $9 million a year?
Boy, I don't think they can just start over at that cornerback spot, and you would think at one of the safety spots this offseason going in the next. I mean, that would be really difficult. Sam Shields, boy, I mean, 2 years ago, tackling is an adventure for him, and now he's one of the top cover corners in the NFC probably. Talking to Joe Witt, he had him down for just 41% completions on Shields this year. When he can make a play on the ball, he usually makes it. Look at that division. You got Calvin Johnson, Brandon Marshall, Alshon Jeffrey, Greg Jennings. Yeah, the Packers are probably going to have to pay Shields a lot of money, but I would think you'd pay him a little bit higher than what you'd want as opposed to a B.J. Raji or a Dietrich Smith or somebody else. But we'll find out. As you wrote, negotiating-wise, they might be apart right now.
Yep, I think so. So, yep, right, good call.
All righty. We're going to go to Josh Kruger, he asks, what should the Packers do differently in 2014 to increase red zone efficiency?
Well, you talked about the tight end.
Yeah, I think, do they draft the tight end? They haven't done that in recent years. They took Taylor in the seventh round as more of a special teams guy a few years ago, Corliss a couple years before that, and then you're already going back to Finley in 08. It's been a while, and we've seen some really good athletic pass-catching tight ends come into the league the last few years. Maybe this is the year they take one.
Depends how much they believe in Bostic, right?
That's the X factor. They like Brandon Bostic. Season ended on IR. He kind of looks like a Finley out there, but still pretty raw.
Yep.
But we'll see there. Andrew Corliss, do you bring him back?
I really don't know about that, Tyler.
All right, let's do one more here. Okay. Salmonius at Sally Lame. Yes. Does James Starks have a future in Green Bay with Eddie Lacy?
I'm sure the Packers would love to have him back. There's no question about that. just depends if he gets money. If there's money out there for a player like that who's had a bunch of injuries.
A lot of injuries, mileage on the odometer for a running back. I don't know how much he'll really get above the minimum. So yep. Maybe he does return. Just remember, they like DeJuan Harris a lot, too. Jonathan, Mike McCarthy liked him a lot. Jonathan Franklin will be returning.
I kind of like Khalil Bell. As a ball carrier, I kind of do.
Good player.
Now, when they hit early in camp, you bring Khalil Bell back. You let him soak up the hard hits in the first week of the drilling.
There you go.
And you see what he's got, see?
So they're probably going to come out with all these tackling drills next camp after your common last, right?
Won't even wear pads the entire summer. You watch.
We'll be back next week to break down the offense. Thanks a lot, guys.
Sam the Sham coming up next.
2, 3, 4.
Hey, it's Boxer.
And I'm Sarah Towns with Experience Columbus.
Did you know Columbus is home to the number one science museum in the country?
Ranked number 7 on Food & Wine's list of America's next great food cities?
And one of Condé Nast Traveler's top 10 best big cities in America?
Yes, Columbus. An Experience Columbus podcast keeps you in the know about what's happening in the Arch City.
Binge, listen to all the current episodes.
Or catch up on all things Columbus and discover what makes this city so special.
By the end, you'll be asking yourself, can all of this really exist in one city?
Yes, Columbus.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.